How are you doing, my friends? We're good? Are you ready? I want to just take a moment here and shout out our amazing musicians. Can we thank you for them? Thank you, Mark. On the day my younger son was born, the circle of greeters included those you might imagine, exhausted, euphoric parents, an unflappable laboring and delivery nurse, our funny as hell delivery doctor, and an ever encouraging doula. But that Saturday evening in November, it also included a yellow-gowned team from the neonatal intensive care unit, known as the NICU, who before we could clean his hands or wrap his body or whisper, welcome, whisked our newly born baby to a small station in the corner where they set about helping him to breathe. Now, earlier in the day, while the news of Cassidy's impending birth was probably still somewhere between the Arctic terns and the garden warblers, there in our local hospital, word had gone out, and word is going out over here in the corner, I hear. It's not my own little one. He is home in Vermont, so. There in our local hospital, word too had gone out to the neonatal team that their services might be needed later. My amniotic fluid contained meconium, which is a technical term meaning a mammalian infant's first stool, aka baby's first poop. Something I never imagined I'd be saying from a pulpit, but here we are. But this is life, right? So this baby's first poop thing, many are unaffected by it, but some do have complications from it, thus the precautionary presence of the yellow-gowned team. But in our case, they were needed. Their skilled hands would be the first to care for Cassidy, and when it soon became clear he would need longer support, they took him down the hall with them to the NICU. So an hour later, we joined them in a room filled with little, teeny, precious preemies, in a room where I, with a plump, overdue baby, never expected to be, listening to a kind but very serious doctor explain that things could go one of two ways, and that we would know more in the morning. Best to get some rest now, she suggested. Yeah, right. So back to our room we went in the mother-baby unit, but without our baby. My husband, Ben, was overwhelmed and panicked and sad, and my emotions were mercifully blunted by those post-delivery hormones. Amen. But when our nurse poked her head in the room and asked if by any chance we would want a visit from spiritual services, the reference to my own trade, my stock in trade, broke through that oxytocin-induced armor, and I barked, oh, yes! Definitely surprising my husband, and I think the nurse, too. We want some spiritual services. I was like, if I am not holding my baby, I'm going to have a visit from a chaplain, right? So then a few minutes later, the nurse returned with the names of the on-call chaplains. There were two choices, she said, father something and someone else. We went with someone else. Which, I mean, as no offense to my Catholic colleagues, and Nancy's amazing GA sermon last year notwithstanding. Remember that, y'all. But I thought the odds were possibly higher with someone else of having a theological match. So half an hour later, there's a knock on the door, and this middle-aged white guy came in. He introduced himself as Matt, and he pulled up a chair. And I explained that I was the Unitarian Universalist minister in town. And Matt told me he was ordained in the UCC, the United Church of Christ, our kindred cousin. So I relaxed a little bit. And then he told us he left his harp in the hall. So I relaxed even more. I figured we were in good hands with a harp-playing Congregationalist chaplain. So we had the visit, and it came time to wrap it up, and Matt asked if we wanted some harp music. And though I love harp music, I wasn't quite in the mood, so I asked if he would pray with us instead. And I wasn't certain, but I thought I detected a faint hint of surprise on Matt's face. Like, oh, at receiving a prayer request from a Unitarian. But he didn't miss a beat. He came closer. And by now, we were holding hands. My husband and me and our new friend. A human circle formed again, this time not to welcome the baby, but to pray for his well-being. We closed our eyes. There was quiet. And then some more quiet, which began to seem long for a pre-centering prayer moment. And as it stretched on, it occurred to me that maybe Matt didn't know how to begin, or to whom we should pray. And I realized I hadn't done my theological elevator speech for Matt. I had not assured him that, yes, it's complicated, but God language would be great right now. Thank you. And here was Matt, trying to find the right name, the right language for us that would comfort us. And just as I was thinking I should jump in and just get it all started myself, he began. What a day. This was not a name for the holy I had heard before. But it could not have been more perfect. Because what a day. What a day indeed. So Matt went on to pray for the hands of the medical staff, and then that Cassidy would feel the love of his parents, which is when my own tears came. Because though what I wanted more than anything was for my new son to survive, what I wanted just as much was for him to know he was loved. Raymond Carver wrote in his poem Late Fragment when he was dying of cancer, "And did you get what you wanted from your life even so?" I did. And what did you want? To call myself beloved, to feel myself beloved on the earth. Welcome to the green earth, the people sang. And as they held you close, they whispered in your ear, "We're so glad you've come." You know, that night, shrouded in deep uncertainty, Matt's prayer didn't magically fix. It didn't stop our worry. Lord knows we were worried. It didn't assure us that everything was going to turn out just fine. It didn't tell us this was part of a plan. It didn't say my son's lungs would be healed by morning, but what it did do simply and profoundly was remind us that we were not alone, that we were part of a larger world that welcomed us just as we were right then, scared as hell and desperate in our love. I believe that when all is said and done, writes Anne Lamott, blessed be Anne Lamott, all you can do is show up for someone in a crisis which seems so inadequate, but when you do, it can radically change everything. Your there-ness, your stepping into a scared parent's line of vision can be life-giving because often everyone is hiding. Your there-ness can change everything. Will you say that with me? Your there-ness can change everything. Now, I think that's the same lesson that the poet learned that night at the Albuquerque airport, didn't she? Naomi Shihab Nye hears the announcement, and after like a little moment of hesitation, she responds. Now, she could have stalled. She could have just scrolled through her phone a couple more times. She could have looked at People and Us Weekly and the nearest magazine rack. But something in her compelled her to go there, to show up for someone in a crisis whom she didn't know. And at her gate, she finds the woman there just like her grandmother, and she puts an arm around her and speaks haltingly in Arabic. And from there, it changes. Well, not the flight delay or the uncertainty of air travel, and I feel and wonder whether some of you might have experienced that yourself this week. But what does change is the distressed woman's position of isolation and marginalization there at the gate. Naomi Shihab Nye extends an arm of human dignity, and in turn, that loving act sets off this chain reaction of connection. They're the poet's friends who answered the calls. There's the woman passing out her cookies. There's the other women accepting them. There's the airline offering free beverages. Now, when does that happen? Did anyone get some apple juice this week? I don't know. There are the little girls serving them. I have gone back to this poem again and again. For me, it is sacred scripture, and every time I do, what strikes me about the scene is not just how widespread the generosity is, but how fluid it is. Who plays the role of giver and receiver shifts as the hours unfold, doesn't it, right? At first, it is the woman, the confused elder woman, who is the cultural outsider at the gate. What's wrong with her, says the attendant. But then soon, 2 hours later, she is the center of a party, right? Her cookies with the powdered sugar gracing everyone at the gate, as perhaps you have been graced by powdered sugar this week, too. I would venture to say that through the accumulation of these acts, that little gaggle created maybe just for an hour a little version of beloved community right there at the airport gate. It reminds me of how the late teacher Henry Nouwen describes hospitality, which is a free space where the stranger can enter and become a friend instead of an enemy. And that is what Shihab Nye describes when she says, I look around that gate of late and weary ones, and I thought, this is the world I want to live in, the shared world. Not a single person at the gate seemed apprehensive about any other person. This can still happen anywhere. So my friends, old and new, I look around at this room, and I think of those who are worshiping with us around the country. And though it is a bright morning here in New Orleans, I think too that all of us are in some sense like the travelers at Gate A4, because we are late and weary ones. We may be weary for many different reasons, but certainly among them because what a night. And what a week. And what a spring. And what a year. Has it been a year or what? It has been hard work. This resisting, this ministering, this leading, this teaching, this changing systems, this changing or trying to change ourselves, this caring for the vulnerable, this grieving, this dismantling centuries-old systems and structures of white supremacy, this fighting for justice, this fighting with each other, this building a new way, this calling Washington 5 times a day, this listening deeply to those with whom we disagree, to those we don't like very much, this showing up, this being there again and again. But I'm going to tell you this too. I look around at you, beautiful and weary and hopeful ones, and I think this is the world I want to live in. The shared world. The shared world. And the poet tells us, she tells us, she is preaching to us that this can still happen anywhere. Do you believe that? Then let us say, this can still happen anywhere. This can still happen anywhere. It can happen at the airport sometimes. It can happen in a hospital room. It can happen at the courthouse. It can happen at a prison. Preached Brian Stevenson to us last night. It can happen at the bus stop. It can happen in a plenary hall. It can spring up suddenly like the appearance of an abandoned bus on our street one morning. Or it can come to birth slowly, like a long and arduous labor. But and alongside that enduring truth which we know deep in the bones of our being, we also know, don't we, with equal certainty that just because it can happen does not mean that it will, right? Can is the possibility of the shared world, and will is its guaranteed arrival. And as is so much with our life on this precious green earth, there are no guarantees, okay? There is no guarantee that we will get exactly what we want in this life, or even as the stones sang to us, if you try sometime, you get what you need. I should have run that with Mark beforehand. But you got the point, okay? Thank you. Thanks, Elizabeth. There is not a guarantee that the cure will be found in time, or that justice will be done in our lifetime. There is no guarantee that our health care will hold or that the despots will fall. There is no guarantee that humankind will once and for all lay down our swords and shields, or that the generosity of the human spirit will win out over its greed, or that our sense of shared humanity will triumph over our tribal, our primal tribalism. And there is no guarantee that we'll be able to stop the rising seas in time to save the islands and the coastal cities or prevent the deep suffering that that change in climate might bring. Much is uncertain and there are no guarantees, and maybe you are thinking just quietly, you're not going to admit it to the person next to it, you, but you are thinking, so what is the point? What is the point of all this heavy lifting when there are no guarantees? Maybe it's better to hunker down, circle the wagons, turn off the news, return to our familiar patterns, retreat to our comfortable worlds. God love those comfortable little worlds. And stop worrying about the shared world. And if you are thinking that, I wouldn't blame you. It's a tale as old as time. And it is utterly human. But I would still say to you, don't do it. Don't do it. Resist that urge. Circling the wagons, getting into our little comfort zone may feel like the path of least resistance right now, but it is always a loss in the end. It may get you through some days, but it is not how our precious human lives were meant to be lived. Our faith teaches us we were made for this work and that we are called to this work. So hard at times of loving and being loved, of welcoming and being welcomed, of sharing our lives with each other, of caring for and collaborating with one another, of comforting each other and getting uncomfortable with each other. Right? Of widening the scope of justice and mercy in our world. Our faith, as so many of our wise ones have told us this week, testifies that we come from a common source, which has given us this gift of life, and that we head to the same place, which is love, the arms of love. And in the meantime, we have one precious, sweet world. This one world we have been given to hold us close, us and the humpback whales and the salmon and the green turtles and the eels and the warblers and the sun and the moon and the forests and the oceans. And I believe that the only way we're going to keep this world we love is to share it. The only way we will keep this world is to share it and to live lives and build communities within it that embody that beautiful, original, and holy promise that we are welcome here and that we are and always will be beloved. This is the world I want to live in, the shared world. This can still happen anywhere. So on the day after my son was born, he was struggling still a bit, but 12 hours in, he had rounded a corner. And on morning rounds, that kind but very serious neonatologist approached with a smile, and she gave us a little thumbs up. I'll remember that thumbs up. But right after, our own pediatrician stopped in, and after checking the charts, he told me, with his grizzled wisdom born of a long career, in a few years, you won't even remember this. So I received those words with kindness, right? And they were really a version of a prayer, I think. But I did know right then he was wrong on the facts. Because I had already been changed, or Cheryl, should I say, impacted been impacted profoundly in those last 24 hours, and transformation like that born of heartache and struggle is not ever forgotten. Nor would I ever want to forget that holy encounter with the harp-playing chaplain, whose life-giving there-ness reminded me that no matter what happened, my son and all of us are held in the arms of an infinite, abiding, and mighty love that, like gravity, will never let us go. Welcome to the green earth, the people sang. And as they held you close, they whispered in your curving ear, "We are so glad you've come." Friends, would you now rise in body or spirit, please? I want to invite you, as you are comfortable and the spirit moves, to make a physical connection with someone near you. Take a hand or touch an elbow or touch your hand to your heart. We can do it. My dear friends, on this day and in the days to come, may you call yourself beloved. May you feel yourself beloved on this earth. So may it be. Amen. You can stay connected or not.
Please join us. Please join us in singing a song.